Blog Talk Radio.
Seemed to do a complete 180 as to where the other two were going.
And I was very confused by this book, because
yes.
not only did
Leo, I think I know where the confusion is, and we'll get into that. I want to get into that. I think I know what you're talking about.
And he writes about this in his epilogue in the back, and he had trouble with it as well, and Peter did, and I have to agree with what he said, because I didn't.
Well, Leo, let me do this. Give me a minute. Let me give him a call. I'll get back to you.
All right.
Okay.
Give me a few minutes.
Sure. We'll put you on hold. That'll be good.
Maybe you can tell the listening audience why you were confused.
Well, I have to explain that. The reason that this book confused me over the other two, and I'm sure you know, I don't know if somebody listening to this has actually read or maybe heard our other programs, but the Transylvanian Sunrise was a very fascinating account of this discovery of the 50,000 or more year old Sphinx and the holographic this and that and the holographic archives and so on and so forth that were discovered by some alien being. But as far as the second book was fascinating too, because he describes the author Radu describes the initiation process, that the occult initiation process that he went through, where he was actually introduced to the blue goddess and so on in this mountain in Hungary and Transylvania and so on. But he was given this book five tablets or something or other. I don't know. Personally, the book went on, but it was much more fascinating because it brought in a bunch of interesting esoteric aspects and mysterious kind of people. But in the third book, it became more of some kind of testament to Christianity or something, you know, some kind of dialogue going on to try to convince the reader that Christ is coming and the world is ending and the blah, 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 blah. I mean, it just was like so full of crap, you know, that it just started to sound like the old, you might as well turn on some Looney Tune evangelist on TV, you know, Jimmy Swaggart or some other asshole, and expect the same kind of stuff coming out of them. You know, it really, even through the whole book, and I gave the book a chance, but, you know, even when you got into the super souped up electric cars going through the tunnel with cyborg kind of people that you're dealing with, it just didn't make a lot of sense to me. So we'll explain this. George and Peter are back on the line, so let me grab George here. Hi, George, how are you?
Hello, Peter, are you with us?
Yeah, Pete's here too. Hang on a second. Hi, Peter.
Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Okay,
I'm good, thanks.
in your absence there a few minutes, I was kind of expressing my
confusion
about the book, and also my dismay to a large degree that I was rather disappointed with the.
Well, let's let Peter explain the book or talk about the book.
No, just
and,
to be fair.
Yeah.
No, just to be fair, yeah. Before Pete starts, I read the book thoroughly, but I read your prologue and I read your epilogue, and I think you touched on everything that the weakness of the book and some of the confusion
from his perspective, though. Yeah,
like you might have had the same ones after reading it, but Probably the best way to do it is rather than take my question, probably just go more so with the describing this book for the general reader or the listener tonight, and then we can get into some of the more
a little bit of the controversy.
Yeah.
Well,
hold on for a minute. Let me say my piece here for a minute. This book I really loved. I thought it was very good work, Peter. I mean, it's a continuation of your work over the years. And, you know, I understand some of the frustration that people could have with it, but I think we can straighten this out and talk about it as we continue on with the interview. But
I welcome this diversity of viewpoint, and I will tell you why, Leo. Personally, I'm in this role of this book as an editor and a publisher, and also with the continuation of the story. I might have more sympathetic leanings towards the dismay you expressed,
yep.
Although it's over very specific points that he makes, not so much with the sci-fi aspect of the story, which is, of course, everything I've written about has high degrees of sci-fi in it, from Montauk to Philadelphia Experiment to anything. But what I want to stress here before we go into the dialogue of the book, Pardon me. I didn't hear what you said.
I just wanted to say this, that the previous books, all of your Montauk books, and I've read, I think, all of them. The one thing that kept me reading and kept me fascinated with your books wasn't. It didn't sound like it was an Ian Fleming mystery. You know what I mean? It didn't sound like it was a James Bond movie script. This one had that flavor to it. It had that something that just didn't resonate with me, and like your other books did. And I couldn't get over that throughout the whole book for some reason. And I really had a difficulty with a lot of the dialogue, the tremendous amount of dialogue. I mean, not that he was recording these conversations, but...
He does record them.
Oh, he did record all of them?
Yeah, he does record those conversations that he has with people.
With Cesar?
Yeah, he records... I asked him about that. He records most all of his conversations for purposes of writing, if he knows he's going to be writing about them.
I realized that he was recording all those conversations that he had with Cesar. But, okay, I can and Eleanor and all these other people...
That changes it a bit.
Yeah. So that does change it in a lot of ways. But
go ahead.
Continue, Peter.
Okay. Anyway, what I want to state here, which I find fascinating, because I had to put a lot of work into that epilogue to make the statements that I did, because I knew there would be people like yourself who would question this and question it highly.
I really appreciated the epilogue. I really did, you know, because not only did it clarify the specific areas that I had problems with, but it also made me feel better about, made me understand more so the reasons for your publishing it, you know?
Yes, well, I find fascinating here, Leo, utterly fascinating, is that the far majority of the people so far, there's only about four people that have expressed, and you're one of the four, this difficulty with the book, and the vast majority are accepting. Sometimes there was one person I know who accepted everything, and then when she read the epilogue, she says, you know, I wasn't using my critical judgment. I now appreciate that. But so I'm saying is, the vast majority of people thus far are accepting without the critical examination you are advocating, and I don't know if this is a symptom of our times. What I would also say is that, well, this controversy of diversity of viewpoints, and George is very accepting of the book, as you heard. So
yeah.
I think maybe we should I will say what I think are the critical controversial points, and you agree with me or disagree, and then expand upon them from your own viewpoint, Leo. If I think that might help, and then George can chime in with what he has to say about it. But what I think the character known as Caesar exhibits vast wisdom in most of the iterations he gives in all of the books. He's a very wise character, and he's very evolved. I was disarmed in when I first read through the book when he talked about the second coming as a matter of fact, as an offhanded comment. Well, of course,
that knocked me out too. I gotta say that.
Pardon?
That knocked me out too.
Yeah, exactly.
I almost put the book aside at that point. In fact, earlier I had difficulty with it, and I kept plowing through it to grasp some of these broader ideas. But I had the same problem you did, definitely.
Well, and then I had to put in the back of the book about Project Bluebeam, which is of course the mass hallucination that the government has been allegedly planning to foster on us since the 70s, and that comes from another author from a foreign country, Project Bluebeam. But
well, that was something that caught me even before I read your Project Bluebeam concept. This whole thing just sounded to me like an illusion, like you know, you're dealing with holographic images and holographic archives. But now you're also dealing with everything that involved with that tunnel had some kind of holographic or illusionary kind of thing where, you know, the walls were moving and that it had of hypnotizing them as they drove through the tunnel and all these other things. It all seemed like one major mind control mechanism, you know, and these guys were all mind controlled, you know, after they got through it.
Well, yes, I understand it. I understand. I also want to say what Radu's response was when I told him about Project Bluebeam, because I said, you know, you're talking to an audience that's very savvy to conspiracy theories, at least in America, and he said that he was well aware of these projects with Project Bluebeam and that they had documents to prove it. Yet he didn't mention them or address it, and that, to me, would be a critical editing issue. That's why I brought up all of these points.
You did an excellent job on that, Peter, by the way. I wanted to say that not only on the introduction, but also on the on that epilogue was what really held it together.
I'm sorry. I'm sitting in the background here, and I'm saying, you know, don't give this book away. It has so many surprises in it. It will knock you for a loop. So, around every corner, there's something going on with synchronicity. But keep going, Peter.
Well, anyway, the end of the book, or towards the time travel device, which is the issue that he goes into the time of Christ, and, of course, this ignites other controversy. I would say if one accepts the general tenets or the general gist of what the Bible says or the New Testament says, it's a reasonable approximation of what it might have been. It's arguably, ostensibly plausible if you accept the New Testament, and it's got its own little quirks and intrigues. But this also what he says is that when he wants to go into the time travel device and goes to see who created it, he's limited. His sensors, there's censorship over where he can and can't go. And this, I find, going back to your statement, is this a mind control project? I have considered that it might be a higher octave of the Montauk Project itself.
I agree with you on that, Peter. And I think maybe if you could digest right now, go back to the initial find before they went into the tunnel, and you know what they found there before their journey. Maybe you can just pump up the scene or give the audience some kind of a picture on what you're dealing with.
Well,
you're dealing
with something that was found underneath this Sphinx, and I think in a holographic technology that can read out your DNA and can read out your the DNA of other alien life forms and can also hybridize the two, and it's a template of basically life as we know it, in addition to a holographic hall of records where you can see the entire history of the world that is, again, bioresonant. All of this technology is bioresonant, which means it's going to reflect the views of the person seeing it. So,
thank you. Thank you. That is exactly what I thought when I started reading this, and I said, you know, this, you know, and then when he got into prophecies and all this stuff, and then this Father Arsène Boca,
Arsène Boca, yeah.
I mean, all of this stuff seems so contrite, and not contrite, so
contrived,
yeah. That, you know, from a religious standpoint. That, you know, it was taken over and it was hoarded over by this guy. He was the first guy, and he, you know, and I'm trying to remember the whole thing here. I've got the
let me explain Arsène Boca. Arsène Boca is not a contrivance. Arsène Boca is a holy man who
he was real, but I mean stemming from him, the entire Christian, Catholic, whatever thing started to, and obviously Radu has a very heavy Catholic background as well.
No, excuse me, I must correct you. He's not Catholic. He has no Catholic, and this is, there's much misunderstanding, and this leads to great intrigue. So we have very, in the West, and I'm not that much different than you, just having grown up in the West, you know, but and having an intellect that will challenge things, but he's not Catholic, and you must understand that those people over there are Eastern Orthodox, which is vastly, vastly different than the Catholic Church. And I've studied quite a bit about the Eastern Orthodox Church, and they believe, and probably correctly, that the Gospels were written down in Aramaic, not in Greek, and they were transliterated into Greek, and this is a big divergence, because the Gospels, if that is true, the original Gospels in Aramaic are vastly different, and the liturgy they do is vastly different original. Now, I'm not saying that it's the correct liturgy. I'm just saying that it's vastly different. So this has nothing to do with Catholicism. It has to do with Eastern Orthodoxy, which is different. Now, it's true that they have a cultural predisposition towards this in spite of the fact that they grew up during communism. And so in growing up in communism, the church is a beacon for light to them, not the way we would look at the church as a bunch of, especially the Catholic Church, as a bunch of pedophiles and this sort of thing. So there's a great cultural diversity, which you don't find in a country right next to it, in Bulgaria, who is not so bent on this. The Romanians, the Bulgarians are very different. So the Romanians also have had this great darkness. You know, we've heard it with the vampire stories, but there is great darkness in that country. The people, yes, and you see it. Many of the people you will see are, you can tell it in their genetics, are related to Vlad, because Vlad, the Impaler, because... He was the father of so many people. He founded the city of Bucharest. So there is, and he was a dark character, although a hero to those people. So you have this great dichotomy of darkness and light in that country, and to where we might look at Christianity as a burden and an oppression, they looked at it during the communist times, especially, as the one beacon of light to a very oppressive times. Now, back to this. So there's a cultural disconnect between the Romanians and the Americans just in the way we grow up. So the Father Arsène Boca is a character who inspires many miracles. And from what I've learned about different spiritual disciplines, there are many different spiritual disciplines on this world, and they're all valid to the degree that they excite the spiritual astral foam, so to speak, and people are active through those different modalities, whether it be Islam, Judaism, Christianity, or paganism, and they vie for control for control and rulership of those astral realms. So that it's coming in this form is just one expression, and it is, again, the bioresonance. Now, we're dealing with bioresonance and mind amplification in all of this, and this is an important feature when you're dealing with any modality is amplification. Every corporation, every religion wants to amplify itself, just like a person has a baby and it's the image of themselves, as above, so below. So this brings up a lot of issues, and what we can call into question the translation of what we're finding, the discovery of what we're finding. I have found different Romanians highly opinionated about what is in that chamber or the nature of the chamber itself, such as, is it in a parallel reality or is it in this reality? And some are very opinionated, and they have no right to be so opinionated based upon the data they have. I'm open-minded towards either side. But go ahead.
That's not an area that I questioned, really. That if that stuff was in there or what it was or what. But what I questioned more so was the dialogue. You know, the dialogue.
He explained.
No, I know it was recorded and so on and so forth. But, I mean, what bothered me most about it was loaded with dialogue, you know. Rather than real description, and it felt more like this book was more of a book of conversion theology as opposed to an account of a tour through a tunnel, you know. I just couldn't get past that because it was in every chapter.
I don't agree that the theology is that much there. It's briefly mentioned in the beginning of that part of the book, and then the latter part of the book goes into the story of Christ.
Yeah,
but I did not see that the book was filled with theology at all.
No, it's
does it matter?
He has with him for crying out loud. He's saying, you know, do you believe in the good and evil? Do you believe in God? Do you believe in this and that? And Cesar keeps saying, yeah, well, you know, God is one and we are, you know, this is the way, you know, and he has all these great comebacks that sound like, I love how they talk about, I mean, it doesn't mean this, but the Akashic cliches, his whole resonance, his whole rhetoric seemed like a big cliche, you know. And that we've heard a million times through Catholic and Protestant and Buddhist and every other doctrine, and it wasn't
any. My point doesn't matter at this point.
Well, maybe not.
Doesn't matter.
Let's hear from George. We've been talking, Leo. Let's hear from George.
Yeah. Okay.
You can bounce back and forth with the polarity here. What is good and what is evil, or whatever, or what is bad. But understand, does it matter? Because it's only your perspective, but it doesn't take from what exists.
You're not telling the people, basically. I mean, I come from an original Catholic background.
I'm not telling them anything because they're saying illusion
to
begin with.
You are a practicing Lutheran, all right? So, you know, but, I mean, I'm more of just a universalist whatever, all right? And I appreciated that section starting the book, okay, where he talks about God's within and within us and all of this stuff. And you talk about the synchronicity and how things work and how things are, but then all of a sudden the book takes a total flip, and he's talking about Christ and he's talking about the end of the world and he's talking about Revelation and he's talking about all these things that are happening, and he doesn't. And another thing that
it's a collective consciousness, Leo.
It's good and evil,
but drawn in manifesting this stuff.
No, but he never names.
Lila, what do you think about this?
Other than it being a
I did not have an opportunity to read the book, but my one question is to you, George, because yes. You said it doesn't matter. Why doesn't it matter, and what matters to you in that book?
What matters to me in that book?
You said what Leo just
said. It doesn't matter to me. It's just an expression that I'm enjoying. Why do I have to sit here and break it down and define its purpose in my life? The purpose is me enjoying it, and that's what I'm doing. But this touches on avenues that goes above what we've been talking about for years.
But, you know, based on, I mean, I don't know. Let's keep it here.
You know, understanding this.
Oh, you know, I enjoy a lot of great books. My favorite book in the world is Three Musketeers. So it's like, you know, but I mean, for enjoyment. But I mean, we're talking about something that was true, supposed to be, you know, truthful, and it happened, and
it's
bringing
truthful about
a brand new revelation. And I accept that. I can understand that premise very much so. But
you
I can't.
No choice.
Can't abide by the cliche of, you know, the overall smell of Christianity here. You know, it just doesn't.
Who's
preaching
that? You're the one that's putting perfume on this. I'm not. You're the one that's doing this, Leo. It's your perspective. It's the illusion
I didn't
you're
put any perfume on it.
Esophagus.
So okay. So anyway, I didn't mean to beat it up.
Creator of the world around you. You draw to you.
After
and
Christianity,
I just
going after the aspects of it in the book, how it just gets dissolved.
And my point is, doesn't matter. That's my whole point. Doesn't matter
reader,
what you focus
on. Yeah.
Well, it's a question. It's becoming a question of preference, and not necessarily religious preference, although that's a factor. But preference. Some people like it. Some people don't. And what I found astounding, to me personally, is that. There's not so many that have read it that are writing in your vein, Leo, which I might be a little more sympathetic towards. But I would also say that what I think is important here is that if this is indeed a discovery that was made, and for all the available data I have, there seems to be that there was a great discovery here. That if it's not like the Montauk Project, I've always said, we don't know exactly what happens. The stories approximate what happened it's very important that swirling all around all the work that I've done or been involved in is the prospect of magic with a K, and magic has everything to do with sympathies. And in quantum physics, they call it quantum affinities. In magic or voodoo, they call it sympathies, you know, where you put a needle in a doll and it hurts somebody. It creates a sympathy which goes across the quantum realm. And we're dealing here with this prospect of this technology that can involve time, manipulation of time. We're dealing with the characters who are around the project themselves. We know that we're not allowed as John Q. Publics to access this type of technology at this particular time. Therefore, there are censorship issues or gin involved. David Anderson has said that there is censorship is the key weapon in military strategy, is access to information and censorship. Now, in this case, we have people who are accessing this technology who seem much more positive than their adversaries, whatever their religious orientation or philosophical orientation is. And yet they are around all of this technology and censorship are issues of good and evil. It all stresses, all the stress points are around good and evil with its accompanying distortion. Now, evil is supposed to distort things, and truth is supposed to reveal things. So if we just look at the perspective of Leo, for example, here, and so far the few who might see it his way, and I'm not disparaging that by saying few, because few are often more perceptive than the huddled masses. So I'm saying is there is a that the truth would be appeared to be distorted here too. So we don't have a clear view, although we do have a view, and we have a view of good and evil intertwining. So that's why I went to the length in the epilogue to embrace everything, embrace the wisdom of all viewpoints, not just the one viewpoint. And it causes us to stretch our views this book causes us to stretch our views of what is and what is not, and then you're going to struggle with your own, whoever you are, your own theological orientation. And George has a very, despite, you know, you said he's a practicing Lutheran, he is. That's a viewpoint he adopts. He's much more diverse than somebody who just is, you know, say, singularly.
No, I didn't mean to insult
him. You didn't insult him. I'm just saying he's oriented that way, but he's also oriented beyond that, as I spent 2 days ago, talking about it.
But I don't want to denigrate poop on the book here. All I'm doing is I was just trying to understand it, and I noticed in the back also that you're planning a fifth book with Radu once you meet him and interview him and talk to him, and that will be very interesting to me. But I guess the one thing the one thing that struck me, okay, throughout this book, because was the level degree of shock that it must have been really somebody going through the tunnel the first time, or even like in the case of Cesar, who went through it and got and came back and went through it again. What got me probably more so was the thought of a mental collapse. Okay.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Where people collapse under overwhelming things, like wow, and the first thing that they do when they start to recover, okay, is try to hold on to some belief, some anchor, and that anchor may be Christianity, may be Muslim,
Buddhism,
maybe whatever, but. So many people in this country and Europe is notorious for its stronghold in Christianity. I mean, Eastern as well as Roman Catholicism, and it would seem to me that somebody experiencing this, like in the case of Cesar. Okay, he's human. He's a human being, and he's seen a lot. But he goes through that for the first time, and what happens is it blows his mind. Okay, and what does he do to try to comprehend everything that he's ever believed in or ever thought of before? The only thing he can resort to is this concept of he transported himself to the time of Christ, and saw Christ on the cross, and realized that it didn't look like the guy that everybody knows. But what I'm getting at is it wouldn't surprise me if he had an emotional and mental breakdown after seeing that.
Well,
let me
say that's what you're talking about is ontological shock. However, in the case of Caesar, he wouldn't have that shock that an ordinary person might because of his training and all of he went through from a very early age. You got to remember, human. I don't agree that he's completely human in the ordinary sense, and that he was brought up from a very early age. He was a special person with this huge umbilical cord, which it means he was endowed with a huge amount of chi or life force energy from an Oriental perspective, and then he was trained by this mysterious Dr. Zen, who's the Lama, orchestrating these things. And I also feel that Dr. Zen's or the Lama's interpretation of these events would be vastly different than Caesar's or Radu.
Well, I sense that, but it wasn't in this book, obviously.
Let me explain something. You might find it amusing, and I'm reading the fourth book now, and the fourth book is totally different. There's none of this Jesus stuff in it. It might be mentioned once, but just alluded to so far. And I've read the first three chapters of the book, and there's six chapters. They're long chapters, typically. It's totally different. It's very intriguing because it goes all these books go in a vastly different direction. And
they do. They really do.
Yes, but let me explain something. In the fourth book, which you might find interesting, is Caesar is doing a remote viewing program in Maryland, not Caesar, Radu, and he's called back on an emergency notice from Caesar. He's having a great deal of difficulty with an American colonel over here, and he's brought back over to back to Department Zero, where there's a lot of trouble going on because they're trying to undermine Department Zero, and he walks in, flown in by helicopter in the snow, to the Alpha base, and there is Dr. Zen, the Lama, waiting for him. And the Lama's waiting, and he has an assistant, and her name is Shin Lee, and she's, you know, this beautiful lady who looks Malaysian, and she is the, you know, assistant of Dr. Zen or Rupa Sundi, the Lama, and her job is to teach Radu the how to interpret this manuscript that was the subject of book two, and this gets interpreted. And she is working with him on a day-by-day basis, and she, like, really rips into him. And he's writing about this. He rips into her when Department Zero is under this great threat, and he says, how can God allow this to happen? And she just rips right into him. And I forget what she calls him, but you might find it amusing. I don't remember the words. And, you know, she says, I thought you really, you know, if it wasn't for what Caesar and Dr. Rupa Sundi said about you, I would, you know, I would can you, because they give you very good marks, and now here you're telling me this. What is wrong with you? And she rips him up.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
So
it's like there is like.
And I appreciate that. I look forward to that new book, because there was such a naivety there for some reason. With Radu and Cesar too, this closed-mindedness, religious thing that really really bothered me. Yeah, you know, it was funny. I did a show with Vince Bugliosi. Prosecutor, familiar with him?
Yeah, I was from the Manson case.
Yeah, American. Yeah, and he wrote a book called The Divinity of. It was question. I forgot what it was, but his latest book, and it was about the divinity of God, and agnosticism. Okay, he's an agnostic, but yet you know the only areas that he would attacked was Catholicism and Protestantism.
Yeah.
Okay. He wouldn't go into Buddhism. He wouldn't go into any of these other areas, you know, or even any indigenous beliefs. But his whole thing was that he didn't believe it because, you know, here's the evidence that I've come up with as a prosecutor. You know, it was actually the prosecution of God, you know. And what I found was he was extremely adamant about his agnosticism, yet he wouldn't venture any. He wouldn't even take any questions on anything other than those areas of Christianity. Okay,
that's because he doesn't know them.
He didn't know them exactly. You know.
So he is an agnostic. I mean, but it's the right reason of his own ignorance. But let me say something about him. Isn't, if I'm correct, isn't he a big advocate that the JFK assassination was pretty much the way the Warren Report told us it was?
Yeah.
And I always thought his iterations about the Manson case were very slanted in themselves as well.
The thing is he's very rigid and he's very belligerent.
And also irritable, very irritable.
He gets extremely irritated, and you know.
He's furious.
I'd like to bring it back to the mystery.
He was fun, but all I'm saying is that I found the rigidity as well as the naivety, you know, this book and Radu's explanation as well as Cesar's explanation of the world, you know. And I don't know, maybe knowing everything that they know. And the Masonic involvement and all of this stuff, the good and the evil, which was another thing that I didn't. I noticed that he didn't really mention Satan. He did. They didn't. He didn't. They didn't mention that as the or give that a name. Though they gave Christ a name and they gave God a name. They really didn't identify evil other than the evil intent of the Masonic, element that was controlling.
Well, it might also
doesn't matter really at this point. I mean, you can just attach on to that and find whatever, connect whatever they want. I don't know if it's important. What I'd like to do is, Peter, if you could, take a minute or so and remind the audience where they can purchase this book and the book in the series, and also the Montauk book, because it's a very exciting book, and I think they're going to want it more and more.
Well, they can all join in the controversy, and I have to say it's kind of fun to watch you guys go at it because you guys are good friends, and
I'd like to talk my feelings on it because I'll tell you what, I enjoyed it immensely, and Peter, you've known me over the years. When I get involved with something. Now, I've been looking now, I think, to close out the Montauk project because it's been a long time. But, it's very easy for me to move, to follow your work with its remaining Sphinx. It's beautiful because, it's I have to say, being intrigued, I have a hard time, I think, in expressing myself, but I think beyond this galaxy where we've kept it in there for years, and I couldn't put it in a more simplified term where, you can get into a lot of the ancient work with Zechariah Sitchin, the Earth Chronicles. It all has to do with intergalactic beings and so forth. But this goes above and beyond that, the different star systems, actually into the stargates themselves. And, over the years, I've hooked on to different pieces of what information I couldn't make reference to. And with crystals and so forth, and I think that drove me into seeking more information on it. But it's through the information that I see with this. I can see right now magic carpets, with crystals as a focus point, just as much as an alien would use, a Pleiadian would use a crystal to guide his spaceship. I think this not only touches base with intergalactic, but outer galactic. It has to do with technology and a connection with the outside world. And to be truthful, that is a connection for me that I'm making, I think, at the end times of what the Mayans were talking about. So if nothing else, we're still on a roll right now, and I can see where we're shifting from one consciousness or one level to another level. And, we're taking for granted a lot of things that we didn't have references to before. I mean, you remember Howard Metz. I have books and materials that he picked up all over the world that, there was no reference to them. The reason why is we didn't have the tools and the information to use. It's like the computer. With a Bible code, it wasn't until we invented a computer that we were able to analyze the Bible and see that it is a code put in motion. But, I got to say, this feeds the thought for what happens afterwards. And, a continuing thought, something altogether new. And I see a lot of newness in this. And I don't want to give it away myself, but I think a lot of old things that we had no understanding of, that they're making much more sense. And, Peter, it's the synchronicity that we've been talking about, and it connects everything. The underground tunnels with Montauk, with the underground life forms, and, just life forms themselves. There has been a connection, I think, with terrestrial beings from the inner Earth. And they're quite startling, I think, in following the evolution from a crystal domain. I'll go on to this right now. I can go on there for a long time, but I think this fractal understanding of consciousness has manifested itself, and it's not done yet. And yet this fractal understanding connects us with everything. And you've connected us with everything, but you've connected us with the outside world with these books. And that's the one thing I want to say, the outside world that we've only been seeing inside the box. And right now we're looking at the outside of the box because that's where we're going. That's where it is. And,
if I can just interject,
more and more every day, we're living a dream state.
If I can just throw a compliment your way there, Peter, and of course George too, because without the last 5 years of George or 6 years of George, I don't think I could come nearly as close to understanding this book as I do now. But what I wanted to say is that what struck me and what caught me at the beginning of your book and kept me going was your the synchronicity aspect of it, and so much of what he stated early into this book was that not only was the synchronicity involved, but was the concept of the God within, okay, and the broader, it had a much broader sense of what was actually going on and around the world. Why synchronicity is so important, but also why the belief of God within you, all right, makes so much sense. Okay, that all seemed to make sense to me, but then of course it kind of turned around, kind of strangely, and that's when I lost it. But your book that you did, and I forget, I'm sorry that I forgot the name of it. It was the Montauk Revisited, or
Montauk Book of the Living, perhaps that's the one you liked.
The one where it was all involved with synchronicity. It was a fascinating.
Yeah, well, they all are pretty much involved with synchronicity. Yeah, and that's why this comes to me.
That one was the most. That one was the most pronounced, I think.
Maybe
that even talked about your name and everything else, and how you. I was fascinated. I was really fascinated by your story, but this one started with that, and there was a lot of real stuff in there that got me excited, but then it kind of like dampened. You know,
well, Leo, let me explain something which will help you understand. And first, I want to address George's question about if people want the book, they can go to www.skybooksusa.com, skybooksusa.com, or they can go to Amazon and they can get it either in ebook form or in regular form from Amazon or from Barnes & Noble. It's even available on iTunes in ebook form. But Mystery of Egypt, it's called. Mystery of Egypt, the First Tunnel. Now, one thing which you have to – it's very important to realize the context of how this came into my life. And Leo, as somebody who's followed my work and enjoyed it, this – you see, the reason this book is even came into print in the Romanian language or all of Radu's books is because of the Montauk Project was published in Romanian. And when he read it in Romanian, in the Romanian language, and he wrote to the publisher and says, I have a book, would you like to read it? And it was all these stipulations that the publisher couldn't meet him. But they worked out an agreement, and this is how this book came out into the public, first in Romanian. So,
yeah, I wondered what it is. Yeah, I wondered.
Yeah, now this is the Montauk Project book. If you look at writing as a magical act, It went all the way into the country of Romania, and David Anderson was putting in his two cents in some sort of strange way. But he, you know, because he's the one who introduced me to Romania, but apparently not to the publisher. And
you know,
although
he
met the publisher.
You know, you'd be very surprised. I was kind of shocked that I actually got 36 visits from Romania this month.
Well, they do pay attention, and we can go into the Romanian aspect. But let me go ahead and say what you were going
to
say.
A lot of European, but the Romanian for some reason. I got this month. I got 36 visits from that one country this month.
I have a definite following in Romania, and it's worth talking about in its own right. Keep in mind, a lot of people in Romania understand English, and they understand it well, if only in part because of television. But and it is their second language. But those books were published in the Romanian language, and it's taken a long time to get them into English. I've been told by certain Romanians that the books in English are easier to understand than Romanian. In other words, they're clear because I edit them and I process them. But all of this information and intrigue comes to me by way of this Montauk Project book going over there, and it generates synchronicity in my life. And these characters come into my life In much in the same way, Preston Nichols came into my life, and Preston is not only a genius, he's a screaming genius, but one of the problems with Preston, he will admit this himself, is that his data will not, some of the data will miscalculate or not line up. He's not careful about his facts. He's totally right brain, meaning he's very creative and he's a genius. He's not trying to dot his I's and cross his T's too much at all. In fact, he will flagrantly misrepresent the I's and T's, you know, and some people have a great deal. So I've always had to be a filter in trying to, you know, it's like panning for gold. Some of the stuff is sludge, and you throw it out. And the people who know Preston closely know this about him. They have to put up with it. It's like you get if you want 10 or 20% of gold, you've got to put up with the 80 or 60% or whatever is there of the sludge while you're mining for gold with him. And, you know, I saw him for the first day, the other day. I saw him both, George. He was very on that day. He was very on, and in my experience with Preston, he's either on or he's off. Now, these characters are completely different than Preston, and I haven't met them yet. But what I want to tell you is I have two Bulgarians in my house right now, my translator, my publisher. They've been here. We visited Preston and George the other day, and they have brought wonderful synchronicity into my life because I've been traveling. You know, I took them to Montauk. They met Duncan, they met Preston, they've met different friends of mine who are very key in this stuff, and what I realized is that the year 2013, which was supposed to be a big year for the Montauk Project, we weren't supposed to be able to get past 2013 according to those legends, and now we will get past them, but I realized it's going to be an integration of the characters of Montauk with some of these characters in Romania, because I'm supposed to be meeting the alchemist Eleanor later this year. So
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, because that's great that you'll be meeting him.
Yeah, I have not met him yet, and I don't expect it to happen until September or October, and at the soonest. And this for these characters to possibly integrate and cross-pollinate, they're basically two time projects. And all time, space-time projects are connected by their nature. And none of this would have happened. None of my integration with this Romanian stuff would have happened had it not been for David Anderson, who sent me over to Romania in the first place and paid my first trip to go there. And, you know, as if he was on some mission, he always desperately wanted to get me there. Now that he's gotten me there, he doesn't have to worry about it. You know, I go on my own. I'm going there again this August. And I'm going to meet a whole bunch of new people, and including many new Romanians I do not know who follow my work and will give me tidbits of what they know and what they, you know, are trying to find out. Also, I want to add is I just received information from a man in California who said that his cousin is going to meet this man. I forget the last name. His name is Ion. And he's the richest man in Romania. He's a sports star. He was a tennis star and a hockey star. He became rich doing the Madrid Open and some other big tennis tournament. And when Romania became communist, he took over. He made the first bank in Romania. So he became a billionaire. And he owns, according to this man in California, most of the property, if not all the property, around the Sphinx and the Bucegi Mountains. And he probably owned the property where this Alpha Base was before they, you know, acquired it from him and did the digging. And this guy's cousin is going over to Romania and is going to talk to him. Now, I asked one of my friends in Romania, my translator, about this guy, and she says, I don't know too much about him except that he's a Mormon. And he protects the Mormons in Romania. Now, a Mormon is a screaming gun because that's a Masonic affiliation.
If I could break in for a minute. If people want to join us, they can join us on the telephone line, and we're going to continue on here, even though we're going to break from the blog talk, but you can join us by the telephone. And that's,
thank you for mentioning
phone
that.
Phone number is, Leo, you got it?
I just going to mention it, yeah. We got about 30 seconds left to live stream, but we can continue with the show, and we'll go into the archives, so that's not a problem. But I just wanted to...
915-9505.
There you go.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I just had a question, Peter. I've been listening to you and George and Leo speak. It's Lila speaking now. Haven't had a chance to read this book. Leo just finished it, so I'll have a chance now to read it. But I was wondering, since we last spoke to you, have you had a chance to go back? I think you've probably been back to Romania. And did you get to see the Sphinx or have access to any of the places that this tunnel or the hall or anything
yeah,
that you guys
did you get,
talked
actually
about?
Get inside the, did you get inside? Or I know you were outside of it. But
No. I went back to the Sphinx last summer, and I had a very wonderful trip. We went into a cave that was west of the Sphinx, and it goes into the inner earth. The cave does not end. And what is in front of the cave? A monastery. So, you see, there's a lot of that energy. The cave was beautiful. But, no, I didn't get into the special area, although I did meet people who claimed to know certain things about it. And this is where the opinions get very high. But, no, I don't know
I can break for a minute, I remember the Mormons, and I was working with some work, excavation there in Utah, and there was a Sphinx, an old Indian medicine graveyard. I think Robert Morningstar was the one who talked about that originally. He had pictures of it. And it's a Sphinx. It looked like three or four times older than the Sphinx in Egypt. And it just relates to that as being another place, a stepping stone around the world where they had these chambers. But, you know, I'm just saying the Sphinx is connected with it.
Yeah, there's a lot of strange things in Utah like that Mormons and apostate Mormons monitor. There's a lot of stories about Utah. I find it hard to put my finger on some of them, but
they're all real. They're not real. Go ahead.
What did you say, George? They're not real.
They're not real. I mean, you know, it's some places you know they fit in, some places they don't. But they're all part of the original concept. They're just displaced differently.
I want to say
one
thing.
You see it your way, somebody else sees it a different way. It's like a basketball. Dribbles, you know, at different speeds. It's a matter of catching the right one at the right time that you lock into.
I want to say one thing, too.
Conversation that's going on. Go ahead.
I want to say one thing that will help as well is that in this new, the fourth book, Radu is posted into Department, I mean, he's permanently placed into Department Zero, and the first job they want to give him is interpreting the real and the unreal, because Caesar no longer can do it. He's got to go do other duties. And in other words, his job becomes, well, to interpret reality versus unreality. And this is like what you call Department Zero stuff, X-Files stuff that comes into their realm. So we're dealing with the very thing you're getting irritated about with this Christ stuff is, well, where is it real and where is it unreal? And that is his job, is to interpret this thing. Now, I can understand that you're not happy with the interpretation, but he's struggling with this issue, and this is part of that job, and this is part of it's the cusp of reality, is what I would say.
Oh, I understand. I understand. Don't get me wrong. I mean, for all those who believe, you know, go on. I got nothing against them believing. It's just that, personally, looking at it,
you were questioning. That's all.
It just brought up so many questions, that I just couldn't. In other words, I wasn't really. It threw me because it took my focus off the tunnel. It took my focus off the adventure, and transferred the focus to. To theocracy, to theology, and to some grand manifestation of Christhood, but as Christ, as opposed to as, you know, that, in other words, they were projecting another figure. They're saying that God is in everyone, and then all of a sudden they're going to the Christ thing and the second coming and everything else, that everybody is, everybody
hey,
has to...
Hey, Leo. You have to understand that you're going to have those people that are going to be drawn toward it. That doesn't mean everybody has to be. Some people are different. That's okay.
Yeah, and I think the reason that you're probably not getting much criticism on this is because so many people want to believe that happened, and so many people believe that that's.
Oh, so many people do. I mean, you know, it's
a whitewash. No, I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying that the reason you're not getting the criticism of that is because, you know, you're preaching to the choir, in that a lot of people believe in it that this is going to happen. So this just reinforces their beliefs. So they're not going to criticize anybody who supports their belief.
You're totally right. And the question is, have they really examined those beliefs? And that's my question, because I examine all beliefs very thoroughly.
I know you have. That's why I appreciate your book. But so much. But you know, you really hit the questions, and you really are what you are. And I,
Peter, after all these years, I have a lot of fun. You know, I enjoy your company and some of the work that you know we've talked about and so forth. I really enjoy your company, my friend. I just want you to know that.
Well, you know, it was great seeing you the other day for the first time in so many years.
Yeah, we're both busy, you know. We got things to do, places to go, people to see.
Yeah,
it's always nice to see you, my friend. But, you know, I tell you, our work is captured so many different synchronicities, and I think you and I can both sit back and not say anything but understand, you know, where we come from, where we're going, and the journey we're having. You see, heaven is my journey there, not something at the end of my life. That's for sure. If you want to call it that, you know.
Well,
go ahead.
I kind of missed that. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't.
What did you say, George?
Your journey.
it's always nice speaking with you, Peter. And
oh, we got that.
You know, what do you take on all of this for your own preference? I think your accomplishments and so forth. How do you feel about this?
It's like Taylor. I had some of the same issues Leo did, and so then. What happened with me is I had two people who are very close friends read the initial manuscript. They dropped it like a hot potato, and one would no longer have anything to do with my work.
Yes.
And this person is a very dear friend who is also acting as my agent. And also this person is a very gifted healer who was one time doing a session, and she was interrupted in the middle of the session in a very expensive neighborhood, and this person interrupted her and said, "Tell Peter Moon to leave this stuff about Romania alone. Don't do this." And she says, "But he's not going to listen to me. He's his own person." And then he comes back a while later and says, "Just tell Peter Moon Phil Schneider." She says, "What? What's that mean?" He says, "He'll know what I mean." She didn't know what Phil Schneider meant. Phil Schneider is a character. I published a book, The Philadelphia Experiment Murder, by Alexander Bruce, that I edited it and contributed to. Phil Schneider was killed over his talking about the Philadelphia Experiment and whatnot. That's why it's called the Philadelphia Experiment Murder. So this was a veiled threat to me to get off of it. And she knew that this subject was a hot potato. Somebody didn't want me talking about this Romanian or furthering this Romanian cause. Yet she gets to this point that you got to, Leo, and she says, she had her own criticism. She says, "This is just wrong." And it's just, she says, "I can no longer have anything to do with this." And then another friend of mine he wasn't so harsh, but he says, "This is, you know, Illuminati propaganda." He says, I just can't deal with it. He couldn't get through it. And he's still my friend, but in other words, they were the first two responses I had, plus another person who was not so irritated, said, "I have a problem with it too," but they didn't have such a strong reaction. The first reactions were very poor reactions, so I had to spend all this time, and this is the important part. I had the same questions drawn out of me that you did, and you're saying it's like it triggers a lot of, like, how could you be getting all this intrigue and wisdom and metaphysical knowledge, and then it gets juxtaposed with what appears to be simplistic thinking.
That's
so
right.
what is going on here? And it made me dig deep and come up with that epilogue. But what I would also say is I look at all this Christ stuff differently now as a result. It stretches you. But if I wanted to evaluate the Christian story, which is not a main interest of mine, but I would take the Gospels I was telling you about earlier. The Gospels have been translated poorly. So everything they're talking about in Christianity, if you believe this idea that the Synoptic Gospels of the Aramaic language were the original and not the Greek, you have translations coming into where Jesus is talking about breath. He's giving a Qigong manual. He's talking about breath. And the translations that we have are just an abomination compared to what he's actually saying. So this is complicated. There's other works that are very important, and a lot of it ties to the gypsies. You have to study the whole language of the gypsies, the original language, I forget what it's called, but it's not Romani. That's what people think the gypsies speak, but it's all tied to Egypt. It's all tied to obscure things that would take me so long, and then what would I have? A book explaining, maybe if I explained 50% of Christianity, I'd really have something, but what would I have? You know, I'd have taken up a lot of time. And if you can't get the whole kit and caboodle, what do you have? I think. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll tell you I mentioned Bugliosi's book. It's called The Divinity of Doubt, everything you're saying there, evaluating Christianity, all right, 50% of it, it became a 50-50 split with him, all right. And he, that's why he just threw it up and said, he's a devout agnostic,
Foolish man.
But nevertheless, what I got from this, Peter, I credit you for the work you did in this and putting it together, and especially not knowing the criticism you got early on it. But speaking from just somebody who's read your work and appreciating what you're saying, I thought that the way that it's presented, the way that it came out in Hungarian,
Romanian,
yeah, was it may have been, but it said something in here that they allowed it. Okay, the higher ups allowed him to write it. All right, and they wanted it out. But at the same time, there was this Mussini character, all right, and all these the elites, the Masonic.
So, what is the purpose in
who are actually paying for this project? Weren't they? They were highly involved with it.
So to speak, they must have been paying for it through with their help in the Pentagon. What were you going to ask, Lila?
I was going to say, why did they want this information let out?
Well, it's obviously Caesar picked Radu to write this.
Right.
He picked him to write it for a reason. And Radu is very kind of new to the metaphysical world when he meets Caesar. He's supposedly primed for it by his previous incarnations. But he's primed for it, and it's meant to be written. And perhaps in preparation for the release of the manuscript by Mashandi, which is a very good manuscript, by the way, and it's a very useful manuscript. I've read it, the interpretation of it. And Radu was the one who has to interpret it with the help of this Xin Li. But so I don't know if I answered your question.
What I appreciate is the. Again, the synchronicity of this became apparent as I started to read it. But your connection, George's connection, my connection to this, all our connection to this, but I guess it had to get out. But by getting out, where being the being the first people to actually speak of this, and you being the publisher of this in English, you're taking a big chance. You know,
it made me want to
Mayan calendar.
And see that Sphinx and see all this stuff.
But we appreciate the opportunity to talk about this book honestly, and have you discuss it. But there's no question. I appreciate your work. But this book is a mind bender. You know.
Let me say this, Leo.
You're going to love it or you're going to hate it. It's one of those
books. Well, this is more important than whether you hate it or love it, is that this continuum and this predicament that we're in here, whether you believe in Christianity or not, whether you believe in the Mayan calendar or not, we are at a critical time. And this is one of the things the Transylvania Moonrise, Book 2 in the series, emphasized. We're at a very critical time. So if you're trying to clean out a pipe or a toilet that's blocked, or a plumbing problem where it's, you know, sewage like. When you go into that and you go get that clump of junk or hair or whatever it is in there that's just unsightly, if you've ever done any plumbing work, and you pull it out, this is what we're pulling out with this book. We're pulling out the mass, the clump, the cancer of good and evil. And what it does is it's like you've been delighted with so much candy-colored truth that's nice, and then you come up with this, and whether it's the Christ or the Antichrist that repels one, it's like this is the conglomerate of evil. Whether you believe in Christ and the Antichrist, or you believe that the Christ that we're being given is the Antichrist himself, because that's really what happens. You see this Christ figure, and you say, I have to reject that because it's bullshit. Well, if something's bullshit, if that is the Antichrist, so to speak, so what isn't, and this is sort of like matter and antimatter interacting together, and this is what, it's a trigger. It's like, what is going on? So you have to scramble, and this is why I'm saying I've had to scramble and research this a lot more meticulously, a lot more adventurously, and as I say, I could do a whole book on it. I don't know that I want to, because it could take too long, and I might get to the answer faster by doing the current course I'm on.
Right. No, I found your
pillow.
I admire your commitment to this, but the what you're saying is the good and evil. That of course played through this whole book. But for some reason I didn't see it as the I don't know. It almost appeared to be more of a concession to it. You know, it's there. You have to expect that this is there, and the only way we're going to get out of this is by being good, and the better you are, the more chance you have of having a positive transition into the next whatever, but into the next...
next whatever, phase?
Evolution. Evolution. Most of this book is dedicated towards personal evolution.
I saw that. I definitely saw that. But what bothered, what troubled me, okay, really, was the level of deception, okay, secrecy, deception, conspiracy. All of this that you know is mentioned at the beginning of the book with the hierarchy, with the the shadow government, if you will. This is definitely there, and of course all the technology that's been put out that's been hampered. And Cesar talks about the cold fusion and the all the different technologies that would release the world from its imprisonment on fossil fuels and every other electricity and everything else.
You'll see that speed up, and as the year goes by, you'll see that put into motion. I have no doubt about it. I really don't.
Yeah,
something has to be done real.
It's a very
quick,
positive aspect that will see come about, in the near future. But
it's going to have to, Leo.
And there's something maybe you can clear this up to, is when he talked about the karma, the karmic effect that's about to happen. You know, not only in nature, but also in mankind. What do you see, Peter? How did you read that? Do you think that that karma is really at play here? That these guys are really going to get their just rewards or what?
I think karma is something that's always at play. The problem with karma is it's not instantaneous. In other words, you know, you could. I gave somebody back her wallet years ago. She was sitting opposite me in Santa Barbara, and she walks away. She was the ticket booth person at a garage, and I saw she just left her wallet. It was full of stuff, and I went over there and I brought her wallet. Well, you know, and then all of a sudden we gave it back to her. She was so shocked she didn't even thank me. I said she could at least say thank you, you know. The other day I was at the chiropractor and I was on my way home and he called me and he says, you know, you left your wallet in the parking lot. One of my patients came and picked it up. It's like, you know, this is years and years later. I say, well, you know, I'm really glad I returned that lady's wallet because I got my wallet back now. So it's like it doesn't happen instantaneously.
You're looking for it. You know, you're looking for the loop. But I've had karma kick me right in the teeth the minute, instantaneously. So
it can. But it doesn't.
But at the same time, I always thought it was through black magic or some other occult method that allowed karma to some people to avoid karma or at least prolong its effect before it, you know, hits. In the cases of so many of the notoriously evil people, you know.
We live in a complicated on a complicated playing board, but eventually, you know, what is it? Right now, astrologically, Saturn is in Libra, and Saturn means a balancing of the scales. And
right.
As it does its final pass through Libra, which is in the next several months, it's going to really, according to astrology, is going to really tip the scales and clean up the things that haven't been cleaned up. In other words, maybe Obama will really be, you know, John Travolta's been found out. Maybe, Obama will really be found out for his birth certificate or something like that, this type of thing, and he won't be able to get away from it. Who knows? This is the type of thing. And of course, yeah, and this is talking about a bigger picture, planetary karma, and it doesn't mean we're cooked, but it means we better pay attention. This is true all the time. Karma does not happen for everybody at the same time. I mean, the people that lost their homes in Katrina, that was their day of reckoning. That was their day of judgment, so to speak, on a scale. And those of us who are in the Northeast, we didn't have anything happen. We were smug, and things have happened. And the people, well, we had 9/11 in New York. Some people lost their homes there. So it rotates around, and you've got to pay attention to your orbit. It's all about your orbit for what your perspective is. But
you look at those Midwestern cities like Joplin, Missouri, and all these other places that just got wiped out. I mean, the entire town is wiped out through tornadoes. I mean, what did these people do to deserve that kind of fate, you know? It's not like they had a satanic temple over there, you know? Those kind of devastating losses are impossible to comprehend. You know,
they are part of life, and some of us, you know, we all meet our maker at different times. You know, we all get married or born or whatever happens, graduate at different times,
and meanwhile we go on.
We go on and we take our experience and we're all patterns. We're all moving on the tree of life, and that the tree of life is just the iterations of life in the labyrinthine way that life is. And by studying the Tree of Life is a great way to study everybody, and the law of karma is a part of it, but it's not the only part. You know, it's
just a small diversion here, Peter. Have you heard from John Ford at all?
He's been calling me for about 10 days, but I've been off with my Bulgarian friend, so he hasn't been able to get through to me.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to keep up with his situation. I believe they got a trial set.
They have
a,
I don't know. It's about, when is it? September?
Yes. Oh, okay.
I said, is it September?
I
don't know.
I don't know. There was something mentioned about the 20th of September on that date.
Okay.
But, you know, I just wondered if you heard from him lately. Well, recently, you know, but...
No, he's called. He'll probably call tomorrow, but I'm never here when he calls.
Yeah. Well, enjoy yourself, my friend. And, you know... always love having you on. You got to keep us up to date on what's going on with us, and even the reviews of what people think of it, Peter.
Yes, well, I appreciate the controversy here, because this is the first, you know, time other people have addressed the controversy, and you know, so far it's like no controversy. So, you know, it might have made for a well. It's fine. You know, it's. Controversy is good. It makes us think. It makes us stretch our minds, and that's what I want to do. What I want people to do, and I want them to think for themselves. I don't want them to believe what is said. I want them to think for themselves.
Your book definitely does that.
And as a person who hasn't read it yet, it makes me want to read it, listening to the different points of view. So I think that's great.
Yeah.
Well, Lila, after we do this. After we've done this show, Lila, if you want to call me, I just like after doing this show and hearing all this stuff, I'd love to hear, if you could at least email me or call me, I'd just love to hear what you have to say about it.
Okay. I will.
She will, believe me. We want to have you back on too, Pete, as soon as you're available.
I'd be especially interested after your trip in August.
Romania.
That's going to be fascinating, I'm sure.
And we'll see how the book is doing then. And, you know,
and how your next book is doing. We're looking forward to, I know Leo's looking forward to that, and George and myself.
Yeah.
I'm going to push it out as fast as I can. The fourth book, I haven't got it all. I've got about three chapters. I'm waiting for the fourth one this weekend. And it comes to me in bits and pieces. So I look forward to
great
being
work,
back.
Peter.
All right, thank you for having me.
Well, thanks very much for
pleasure,
being
Pete.
With us.
And,
it's been our pleasure.
And thanks for writing the book and doing what
you
do.
My friend.
And thanks so much for helping us out with this. This was great.
Of course,
take
George.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Right. Good night.
Good night, Peter.
And George, thank you so much for
helping
us and arranging
Peter's
it's always nice speaking with Peter. You know, he has so much to say. And
he sure does.
Sometime we'll have to get him on just on some of his work. I mean, he's got a series of books behind him and a background, and I always loved his work, and whenever I can work with him, I will, and I have, and we'll continue on. But I want to thank you folks for your time tonight, and God be with you, and I'll be speaking with you down the line.
All right, George.
Okay, thank you very much, George.
Yeah, have a good night, then.
Good night.
Good night.
And I want to thank everybody for joining us.
Yeah, we thank George Dixon and Peter Moon.
And the name of that book is Mystery of Egypt, The First Tunnel. And you can get it at skybooksusa.com and check it out. And check out
on Amazon, too, I think he said.
Yeah, on Amazon, too, but Mystery of Egypt, The First Tunnel. But I suggest you go right to his site and check it out. He's got a lot of, and you can see all of his
and
books.
And there are other books that you could purchase, too,
books,
that,
yes.
You
and,
know, others that we've read.
The Montauk series is fascinating.
That's a good series.
Yeah, and this Transylvania.
I like Transylvania Sunrise and Transylvania
Moonrise.
Those were
really interesting.
Those were very,
and
very
this
interesting.
This one is fascinating, too. It's just a little more controversial, I think, in its approach. But, you know, hey.
Well, it's making you think.
Yeah, it definitely makes you think. You know, you can go a couple of ways with this book.
Yeah,
you know,
he said so.
But Peter held it together with his editing, and he held it together with his intro and his epilogue.
epilogue.
And
so.
He did a good job with that.
That was a great interview.
Yeah. So thanks, everybody, for joining me and joining us. And we want to invite you next week. Next Tuesday we'll be back and with something really good. I think we'll have Larry Dorman on next week.
Oh, good. Yeah, he's from AFSCME Union Council Board here in New Britain, Connecticut.
But anyway, join us next week and have a good evening.
Good night, folks.
And have a good weekend.